this workshop is really basic. It's for the person who is a brand new leader and going, okay, what do I do now? And what I want to give you are some hints that will make your life easier and will also create an atmosphere for the people that you're ministering to so that they feel like they've been ministered to and are not just giving up an evening and showing up for why are we doing this? I forgot last time, so let me do a little promotion. This is a 4-book help series from Standard Publishing, and the first one in the series is called Let's Get Started. And these are all down on the author's table for you. There's one called I'm a Leader Now What? Talks about more the character of the leader. Now that's a good question. Earlier today I did a session called Leading Dynamic Discussions, and this is a good supplement to that. And then last session tomorrow I will be doing Why Didn't You Warn Me? This is my book, and it's how to deal with challenging group members. So once you get started, what you'll find is you have challenging group members. So keep that in mind if these resources would be useful to you. There's the whole four book set.
Do you know what the price is?
They're $9 a piece. Yeah. Yeah, the retail on them is $8.99, and we're selling them for $9 including tax. So basically we're covering your tax. If you order them from the website, then you have to pay shipping and handling. So if you can pick them up here, you save a little bit of money. Downstairs, right outside of the worship center, there's a table for all of the speakers, and all four of them are there along with other materials that I've got.
Okay,
so let's get started. As you look at your role as a leader, the first question is, so why are you doing this? You know, Lost is on Wednesday night. Why are you leading a small group? There are better things to do on a Sunday morning. Well, sometimes you've been asked to do it. Sometimes you've decided you want to do it. Sometimes it just fell into your lap. But whatever the reason is that you're doing it, as you get started, the very first thing that you need to do is pray. You just gotta do that. Pray that God would lead you and direct you and show you what kind of a group He wants you to have. And in the session this morning, if you weren't there, you might want to pick up the CD. We talked a lot about the different kinds of groups and what you might accomplish in groups, and we can't go into all of that now. But there are a lot of different reasons why people start small groups, and depending on what your reason is, that's going to govern a lot of what you do. But you need to pray, because God might have an idea that's different than yours. You might think that you're starting the group to get to know people in the church, and God might think you're starting it to help people grow, or vice versa. So you'll want to really seek his wisdom on this. What's your purpose? Again, why are you doing this? Some groups start for evangelism purposes. Seeker small groups, tough questions small groups, groups that are neighborhood Bible studies, groups that draw people in who are not believers, who you want to witness to and share the gospel with and bring them in. That's a really good purpose. Your purpose may be discipleship. I mean, personally, that's what I do. And it's really important that you know yourself, okay? I'll make a confession to you. If I do a spiritual gifts inventory, you know, a spiritual gifts test, the only thing I rank lower than evangelism is martyrdom. I just don't have a heart for evangelism. What I have a heart for is growing people up. Once you guys bring them in, I want to grow them up. I want to mature them. I want to disciple them. So that's where my heartbeat is. For me to start an evangelism group would be really, really stupid. It would not be good. It wouldn't be good for me, and it wouldn't be good for them. Because that's not where my gift is. That's not what God's calling me to. That's not where my heartbeat is. My heartbeat is in discipleship. I want to see people grow. I want to see people change. I want to see them renew their mind. So that would be my purpose for doing it. And it's really important that I know that so that I can structure the rest of the group to fit that, rather than trying to do something that I'm not called to do and wouldn't be very good at doing anyway. Now, some people start or join groups. You'll find this a lot. A lot of people join groups for fellowship or social reasons. And that used to bother me. Back when I was younger and so much more serious. You know, I wanted to teach the Bible, darn it. That was what I was in for. I was teaching the Bible, and these people just wanted to stand around and gab and drink coffee. And it took me a while, but I realized that, you know, we don't serve a one-dimensional God. And we're not one-dimensional people. And the social aspect of a group is really important. And we'll talk a little bit more about that as we go along. But if you start a group that is nothing but social, it's going to have a very different dynamic and structure than if you start a group that's aimed at evangelism or discipleship. Personally, I want an element of social in it, but I don't want to be consumed. That's not my purpose in doing a group, but it may be your purpose. You may want a group for member or visitor retention. You know, in some churches and larger ministries, you may have two different kinds of groups. You may have a closed group that's very discipleship, growth-oriented, and you may have an open group that's just sort of an exploratory Bible study. And the difference would be that the discipleship group would be closed in fixed period, and people couldn't come and go. But you want a group that is a drop-in group. So you may be feeling led to have a drop-in group where there's always a place. You know, every Thursday night, there's the Thursday night Bible study. Different people show up, different things happening, but you know, and visitors know, every Thursday night, there's a place to be. So that's a purpose. So depending on what you decide to do, you want to decide on what kind of study that you're going to do. And the type of group that you are going to start will determine the kind of study that you do. Now, when I say type of group, we've talked about the purpose of groups. Type of groups, demographics. Is it a men's group? Is it a women's group? Is it a mixed group? Is it a group for old people or young people or kids, or who's in the group? That's going to drive your decisions. It is easier for a new leader to lead a homogeneous group, a group with people who are like me. It is much easier for a new leader, for me, to lead a women's group than it is to lead a mixed group. You add men in, it changes the dynamics. It's easier to lead a group of people who are about my age, about my socioeconomic level. Seniors, yeah, the group we're in now, we're all empty nesters. We're all going through this thing of letting our kids go, and what do you do with adult kids? Well, we had some people in the group when the group first started. It wasn't really that way. And we had a couple of single younger people, and we had a couple of really old people in there. They left because the cohesiveness of the group was really these empty nesters. And that was what gelled. And the other people sort of drifted away. If you have a wide open group with every kind of person in your church, you can do it. But it's a lot harder. So as a new leader, I would suggest that you start with people like you and then branch out as you gain experience. type of study? Are you a recovery group? Are you a group for healing? The role of the church is really fourfold. We are a hospital, a school, an army, and a family. And depending on which of those you resonate with, that will drive the kind of study you do. And I talked again about that in the preceding workshop if you're interested in that. You need to decide up front as the leader, is this an open group? Will we meet every Thursday night until Jesus comes back? Or is it a group that has a fixed time period? We will meet for the next 12 weeks. And we'll study this thing, and at the end of 12 weeks, we will make a decision about quitting or re-upping or whatever we want to do. But you need to know that, because as you're inviting people, they want to know, am I signing up for life, or am I signing up for 12 weeks? And it's only fair to tell them. Is it an open study or a closed study? Okay, very important decision. And you need to know this. If you're working with a church, they need to be in agreement with it, and the people in your group need to know. An open group is a drop-in group. You want to bring your friends, y'all come. That will probably no longer be a small group. It will become a large group. It will tend to be fairly shallow. The more people you have in the group, the more shallow it will be. It'll be a nice place. You might do a nice Bible study, but it won't be a place for growing deep unless you divide up then into small groups within the group. If it's a closed group, you say, this group will be together for the next 12 weeks. Nobody else can join. We don't invite our friends in. This is our group. This will become our family. And the advantage of that is that it really lends itself to deeper growth and maturity, to discipleship. If you have people coming in and out all the time, your level of sharing and personal growth is going to be right there on the surface. You get to know somebody, you start talking a little bit, somebody new comes in, and your level goes right back to the surface because you don't know these people and you don't know what they're going to be saying about you. And so it's human nature. It's not right or wrong. It's human nature. If you have a group that's closed and you know, I'm with these 8 people for the next 12 weeks, and our goal in this group is to grow deeply, and we won't have new people coming in, every week you can go a little bit deeper, particularly if you as a leader pace that. And you take people deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And at the end of the time, they've changed. And they come out and they go, woo, that was a really good group. I led one group many years ago where it was a women's ministry. It was from September to June, basically the church calendar year. We did a study that's down on the table called Conquering Today's Giants. It's a Bible study through the book of Joshua, looking specifically, topically at conquering the giant in your life. And in the first week, we asked people to identify, what is the giant in your life that's keeping you from entering the promised land God has for you? What is it that's holding you back? And people identified that, and every week we worked on each person's giant for 24 weeks. At the end of that study, every woman in the group had a revolutionary, life-changing decision that they had made during that time because of the kind of group we became. We were close and we were cohesive, and we held each other accountable. And we said, grow, grow, grow. And we loved each other, and it was a closed group. And I've never seen a group grow like that. And it was a combination of the people in it and the study and the time period and the whole thing. But that's the advantage of a closed group. An open group, your dynamics will be entirely different. So it's important going in that you know what kind of group you are and that everybody else knows. So you've decided it's going to be a closed group. Well, suddenly Susan starts inviting her friends in. You know, now what do? This is really awkward. So it's really important that we decide that in advance. Fixed time period or open, you know, are we here for 12 weeks or are we here forever? Some groups are very multiplication oriented. I mean, that's sort of the watchword in small groups now. You grow until you hit some magic number like 12, and then you multiply and you go start two groups and then you multiply. And that is a marvelous strategy for evangelism groups. If you're trying to reach people, bring them in, introduce them to the Lord, and move them out, that's a great strategy. It's not a great strategy for discipleship groups. Because I don't know when my group's going to hit that magic number and when I'm suddenly going to be told, oh, you get to multiply. So it's there. It keeps people off guard. You know, I don't want to get too close to you because pretty soon we're going to split. And there are some groups that are very successful at doing this, but they're splitting every 3 weeks. Well, you don't have time to develop any kind of a close relationship with people in that. So again, you've got to decide what's your purpose. The other thing you need to decide on before you get started is children. Children. Will you allow them at the group or not? If you don't, what will you do with them? Do people have to pay for their own babysitters? That can be a barrier for some people. Do you put all the children in one place and the parents go to another place? It may work. You just have to decide. You just have to make a decision and stick with it because it will come up. You know, if you allow nursing babies, well, when they're 3 months old, that's one thing. But when they're 6 months old and all over the place, you know, how do you say, we loved your baby when they were 3 months old, but now this isn't going to work? Difficult questions. Have to decide in advance. Okay, so now we're going to get ready for the first meeting. You've made all these decisions. The first thing I recommend is do not start without a co-leader. Do not try this alone. You want somebody with you. You want someone to share the load. And that is a person who is going to be your right hand. When you can't attend, they're leading. You can divide up the responsibilities however you want to. And I will have on, it's not there now, on your handout I've got a link for some resources on my website. Within probably a month or two, I will have a job description for a co-leader that is being published by Christianity Today now, and as soon as they get it published, I can put it up on my website. So check back there periodically if that's of interest to you, and it'll be a matrix that'll say the leader does this and the co-leader does that. The basic idea is that you want somebody there working with you. You want somebody who can take over when you're sick or gone or it's your anniversary and you have a perfect right to not show up. And you want someone who will, frankly, do the things that you're not very good at or don't like doing. For example, I don't like making phone calls. I just don't do phone calls. So I want a co-leader who loves being on the phone, who delights in making phone calls and will check in with people and encourage them and talk to them during the week, because I'm not good at it. So that's something that I look for. Look for somebody who can balance you. What is it that you don't want to do or don't do well? How can that person balance you? Okay, so now you get to invite people. Now, this may be done for you in your church. They may say you're leading the 30s and 40s. Good luck. Or it may be that it's up to you to invite people. Even if you're doing it in your church, you may be responsible for getting the word out, advertising, or inviting people one-on-one. And again, this is a decision that you'll want to make in advance. Do you want to advertise in the bulletin and say, you know, any women in their 30s and 40s, we're starting a group on da-da. Y'all come and see who shows up. Or do you want to invite 8 people that you feel God's calling you to invite?
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and, you know, the disadvantage of that is that if you're not careful, it can become a clique, you know, me and my best friends. But on the other hand, if it's your first group, you may want some good friends there to help you learn how to do it the first time before you branch out and open it up to anybody who's in the church. Think about, as you're doing this, think about some of the logistics, okay? Where are you going to meet? Will you meet at somebody's home or will you meet at the church? What is the natural distance that people will travel for a group like yours? If it's a basic Bible study, that may be a very narrow geographic range. People can get that in lots of different ways. And they may not be willing to drive more than a few miles. If it's something a little more specialized, they may be willing to drive further for it because there isn't one everywhere. What are the natural barriers as you're looking for people to come? What are the natural barriers? Are there bridges? Is there the bay? Are there major freeways? Some people feel like, and we live on the peninsula, it feels further to go to San Francisco than it does to go to San Jose. It's probably the same distance, but the barriers, just the traffic and the way everything's laid out, it feels further. So I would be more inclined to, you know, go to San Jose than I would to go to San Francisco, unless it was something really, really, really special, and then I would fight that barrier. But recognize that people have these perceptions. Coming across a bridge feels, you know, Hayward is a lot closer than San Jose. It feels further. It feels like, oh, you got to go across the bridge to do that. So think about that. If you're in the city, how will people get there? Will they be driving or will they be taking public transportation? Are you in a safe neighborhood? Where will people park? Is it safe? Are you, particularly if it's a women's group, you know, is it at a time of day when people can come and feel safe? You need to pray about all of these things and see what God would lead you to. You want to know your mission. And this is just a different way of saying what I already said in terms of what kind of a group are we. And on the website, there are a couple of downloads on know your mission before you invite people. Okay, if I gave the example, you know, if I want deep discipleship and you want to do evangelism and you want to come for coffee, we're going to have a really hard time having a good group. If I want to invite people, I need to know what my mission is so that I can invite people who are like-minded. And so if this is a group that you, you know, has not started already, you'll want to target it. I did one group that was in our church, and it was for mothers of preschoolers. And basically, it was stay-at-home moms of preschoolers. I mean, it was a very narrow group, huge group, but it was very narrowly targeted. It was just, you know, moms with kids at home. And in that, we had to think about the logistics of childcare and provide childcare for all of these many children who were coming. So you've got to think about all those details in advance. And then you need to communicate. You want to talk to people about what it is that's on your heart and find other like-minded people. Decide if you're doing a bulletin announcement. Decide if you're doing a Sunday morning announcement. Decide if you're inviting people by word of mouth. And again, that'll be determined by the kind of group you are in. But the more you communicate in advance, the fewer surprises there are. What you don't want is somebody going, "Oh, I thought we were going to." You know, that's not what you want. You want people who are going, "Yeah, this is exactly what I've been looking for." Now, the host is crucial. Where will you meet? There is a job description. Yeah, this one is up. It's on the website. Give you a job description for the host. You may meet at your own home, and you may be both the leader and the host, or you may smartly decide, "I'm the leader, we're meeting at your house." Now, there are a couple of advantages to this. One is that you're spreading the gifts. The more people are involved, the more ownership they have, the more they will buy into the group. So if it's the Pat show, and it's at my house, and I provide the refreshments, and I lead the study, and I do everything, pretty soon they go, "Well, you know, I'm sort of superfluous here, aren't I?" But if it's at your house and you're providing the refreshments and you get to lead once in a while, then we have ownership. So the host is really important, and the job description is on the website. Think about things, again, like parking and logistics. Is your house the easiest one to get to? Is the person who's volunteering their place easy enough to get to? Think about distractions. This is really important, and nobody ever thinks about this. Well, location is, you know, how easy is it to get to? How easy is it to park? Is it safe? All of that. Distractions. Pets. Children. Neighbors. The band that practices next door. Traffic problems. All of these are important as you're wanting to create an atmosphere. You're wanting to create an ambient atmosphere. If the host has three undisciplined children who have their TV on really loud and they're running in and out of the room, it's not going to work. Not a good place to be the host. If they have children who can stay quietly in their rooms and entertain themselves and the house is big enough that they're fine, that's great. Think about layout. Our house is, we've got a little three-bedroom, one-bath house, and the living room's kind of in the middle, and the kitchen's down on this end, and the bedrooms and bathroom are on this end. Well, if I'm doing a women's group, and my husband is retired, and he's home during the day, and his office is now down here in one of the bedrooms. Well, he can get to the bathroom fine, but he can't get to the kitchen without walking through my group. So I make him go away. I just say, "We're having the ladies over. You're out of here for 2 hours on Wednesday morning." But that's important to think about. You know, if your purpose is to bring people to maturity, if your purpose is to get people to go deeper, they don't want some kid running back and forth. If it's a women's group, they don't want the husband walking back and forth. Likewise, I'm sure the men don't want the wife kind of nosing around. You know, you've got to think about these things logistically so that you have an atmosphere that feels comfortable. I recommend that you not cook fish or cabbage on the night that you have group. Cabbage. Okay. You don't want people to walk in and go, ooh, that smells. You know, it can be distracting. So just think about that. You know, think about doing something simpler. Phones. Did you know? I want everybody to take notes on this. This is really important. Did you know that a phone does not have to be answered? The phone is here for my convenience, and right now it isn't convenient. If you are having a group, it's important that not only cell phones are not answered, but that the host's phone. I can't tell you how many times I've been in a group, you know, and it's at somebody's house, and the host keeps jumping up to answer the phone, and you know they've got voicemail. Let it ring. Because basically you're communicating whoever that unknown person on the phone is more important than whatever's going on here. Now, obviously there are exceptions. If you're, you know, if you've got childcare issues, if you've got a reason why you might be called. But that's not what's going on here. This is just, oh, the phone's ringing, I need to answer it. And the reality is, no, you don't. You can let it ring. And that, what that does is, you know, it's amazing if you go to somebody's house and you're attending to that person and you're talking to them or you're in a study and the phone rings and they go, your phone's ringing, you go, yeah, you know, the machine will get it. You're important right now.
The ring was interrupting.
The ring will interrupt, but so it rings three times.
Why is only 7 times?
Well, set it on 3. Set it on 3. But basically what you're saying is, no, you're more important right now. I'm going to let the phone go. You're important. Lighting. Oh, my. We used to have so much problem with lighting. We'd have to bring every light in the house out so people could see their Bibles. But you may have to do that. It may look tacky, but people have got to be able to see what they're doing. Even, you know, do you have enough comfortable seats for people to sit in? And this is particularly important if you're dealing with older people or people with problems. You know, I've got a hip problem, and it's really hard for me to sit in certain kinds of chairs. Well, depending on where we meet, you know, that may or may not be a possibility. We had a, years ago, we were leading a singles group, and we'd have a prayer meeting in our home for the leadership once a week. And we had what were known as the deep dish sofas. And you'd sit in it and you'd sink halfway down. I mean, it was because they were really, really old and we were newlyweds and that's what we had. But the advantage of that was that we found that people arrived not only on time but early. Because the last people there got the deep dish sofa. And the first people there got the good seats. But you know, as you're looking at hosting, make sure that there's reasonably comfortable seating for the kind of people that you have. Now, if you're doing a college group, throw some pillows on the floor, and they're probably happy. But if you're doing my age, you want some substantial seating. Temperature. You know, you want the room to be comfortable. You don't want it to be overly warm. If it's comfortable when people arrive, it will be too hot in an hour because of all of the body heat. We keep it a wee bit low, but we also have several throws around. And, you know, there's one lady who comes in her mittens and is always cold, and she grabs a blanket and snuggles up. So you want people to be comfortable at different levels. And just be mindful. Ooh, is it getting a little warm in here, or is it getting a little cool in here? Oh, and then there's the important stuff. The really important stuff. The food. Okay, you've got to have food. Unless you've decided for some reason not to do it, the default position is you have refreshments. First meeting or so, you may want to provide them, but very quickly you want to involve other people in that process, whether you have a sign up or people volunteer, but you want to make sure that that responsibility gets circulated throughout the entire group. Refreshments are really important because they give people a chance to be together in a very informal setting. And I always recommend that we do refreshments first, rather than, I mean, you can either do them first or at the end, but I always do them first because, number one, half your people are going to be late anyway. So you might as well spend the time on refreshments and then have a firm cutoff so that, you know, we're going to have refreshments from 7:30 to 7:45, and then we will sit down and move into the next part of the evening. But they'll take that time anyway. You know, when they come in, the first thing they want to do is catch up. So if you don't plan for it, they'll do it anyway. So you might as well make it an important part of your group so that they get that out of their system, and then they're ready to sit down and enjoy. And then you want to make sure that everybody knows all the important details for your first meeting. Where is it? When is it? What do I bring? You know, what do I wear, if that's for some reason important? But what are the important details? How long will it last? All of that. Okay, your first meeting. If it's not at your house, you should plan on arriving in advance, or if it is at your house, you should be prepared. You shouldn't be putting your makeup on as people are arriving. Okay. What I always used to do when I was leading a larger group is I would have the leaders get together a half hour in advance to pray and to go over logistics and details. If it's just a single small group, you and your co-leader still may want to get together 10 minutes beforehand to pray, so that when people start arriving, you're prepared. You're not rushing around like, oh, I didn't know it was 7 o'clock already. You know, you want them to feel welcomed. I like to spiritually cleanse the space. And what do I mean by that? This is particularly important if you're in a public setting, if you're meeting at Starbucks, or if you're meeting at a restaurant, or if you're meeting perhaps even at the church, even at a home. You know, there's a lot that goes on in a space. Fights and anger and who knows what else. And to just, you know, take a moment and say, Lord, we invite your presence into this room. We ask that you would remove every bit of defilement that has come in as people have come and left and deposited their stuff here. We pray that you would just cleanse this space and fill it with your Holy Spirit. And you'll find that, you know, that's not hocus pocus. It really makes a difference in creating an atmosphere for welcoming people, as opposed to having, you know, the anger of your fight with your husband lingering in the air. You want to organize your time. And on the website, there is a lesson plan. And I strongly recommend that you use this or something like it. This is a Word document. It's available for you to adapt to your own particular needs. But as you're planning to lead every week, this gives you your date, any announcements that you need to make, any, you know, when our social is coming up, or we're not going to be here next week, or whatever. Information about the lesson you're studying, your goal for the day. What you'll find is, in most study guides, there are many interesting points that you could discuss. You don't have time to do all that and do it justice, unless you're just racing through the study guide and you don't want to do that. Get the CD from the Leading Dynamic Discussions for more details on this. But you don't want to do that. You want to focus in on a narrow, you want to be a laser, not a shotgun. You want to narrow in on two or three key points that will move people toward your goal. Was it discipleship? Was it evangelism? What was it? What within all the questions that you could ask from the study guide, or from the chapter you're studying in the Bible, or from whatever you're doing, what are two or three key points that you want to focus? And the goal is, for me, that's the aha, that's the takeaway. That is, at the end of the day, what do I want them to have learned? At the end of the day, what's the one takeaway that I want them to have, and how do I get there? And then this part down here is the how do I get there. This is your launching question or your icebreaker, and I talked about all of the types of questions in Leading Dynamic Discussions. So I won't repeat that, but you're going to set the direction with your launching or your icebreaker question, and then you're going to keep people on track with these, and there's another page to this, but this is just a sample, so that you know I'm going to go here, and then I'm going to go here, and then I'm going to go here. I have a game plan. I know where I'm going and why I'm doing it. This is on the website. It's a Word document, so you adapt it for your needs.
Okay.
And the link is here on your handout. The why didn't you warn me .com/resources, and all of the resources that I'm mentioning today are in that one location. There is also, for your information, there's a blog on the same website, and I'd love to have comments and questions. If you get into trouble, you know, send me a question and I'll answer it on the blog, and would love to get into some dialogue with people about the things that you're facing. So please use that as a resource. Okay, can we move on now?
Yes.
All right, so that's there. Whoops, going the wrong direction here. Okay. So first meeting, you've organized, you've got your lesson plan, people arrive. If they don't know each other, you need some sort of a get acquainted thing. And if people don't know each other, I would suggest a silly icebreaker. You know, what is your most embarrassing moment? Or, you know, something that'll just get people kind of laughing, and yet also that isn't just random and useless information, but that tells you a little bit about them. You don't want to go deep and you don't want to go real personal, but you do want to get some sense of who these people are and let people get a sense of one another if they don't already know each other. Worship is very important. A lot of groups don't do it because they don't have anybody who plays an instrument, or, you know, I mean, if I'm leading, I can't carry a tune in a bucket. People just mock me. But this is a great way to use the gifts of somebody else in your group. This guy was in our group for a while. He's a phenomenal musician. He's very, very, very quiet. He doesn't participate a lot in the discussion, but he did worship, and he had a role, and it was really, really important. So if there's somebody else, so that you can offload the responsibility and let somebody else be involved and have ownership in the ministry, that is really important. Now, why do we, and if you can't do that, put on a CD and sing along with it. We have song sheets with the words. We got a couple guys in our group. Our group is really weird. We've got two guys who are phenomenal singers, and the women can't carry a tune in the bucket. Usually it's just the opposite, but these guys are fabulous. And so we can do a cappella. If they give us a note, we just sing a couple of worship songs. Now, why is this important? It really sets the atmosphere. When people come in to your group, doesn't matter whether you're meeting at 9 o'clock on Tuesday morning or 7 o'clock Wednesday night, it doesn't matter when you meet. People are going to be rushing in. They're coming from work. They're coming from meals. They're coming from taking care of their family. They're coming from, you know, and they're rushing, and they fought the traffic, and they get there, and they have a few minutes to talk to each other and eat some cookies, and, you know, that's what you're working with. That's not a good person to try to do Bible study with. What you want to do is you want to create an atmosphere. Now, you could pray and say, Lord, please come into this place and bless our study. We love you. Amen. God would show up, but he inhabits the praises of his people. He inhabits it. He comes and he lingers if we're worshiping him. And the added benefit is that worship quiets the soul. It quiets the spirit. It quiets the people. And it takes these scattered thoughts and emotions that are all over the place, and it brings them in and brings a focus and says, okay, for the next 2 hours, we're here to worship God. For the next 2 hours, we're here because God is here. And it's amazing what devoting 10 minutes to worship will do in terms of the payoff in the rest of your study. It's just, it's essential. We're on the first meeting still. Now, these things are things that you'll want to do all the way along. But first meeting, you need to talk about any goals, any decisions that you haven't already made. And if you have made them, you need to declare them. And if they are decisions that are available to the group to make, you need to be able to discuss those things. Is it an open group or a closed group? What time will we, you know, what are the attendance requirements? I recommend a covenant that you talk about and you sign. It's on the website. It's a Word document. You can change it. But here is a prototype for you to work, and it talks about attendance and what we will do and how we will worship, and there's a second page to it. And if you talk about this and get everybody to buy in and agree, it talks about child care, it talks about all kinds of things. Get this out of the way in the beginning, and you save yourself a lot of grief later. I like to include in this any maturity goals. You know, it is my goal that you will grow in this group. It is my goal that so that people know where I'm coming from and why I'm doing this. Key elements. Oh, let's go back to the covenant for a minute. Some key elements here that you want to include in the covenant and in what you're doing is honesty and accountability. You want to hold people accountable in a loving way. But, you know, if we just get together and talk about the Bible for an hour and, you know, everybody goes home, we're not really growing. So how can I encourage you to grow? How can I encourage you to recover? How can I encourage you to solve this problem in your life? Confidentiality is utterly important. People have to know that what they say in the group stays in the group. That nobody has the right to take anything they learned out of the group to another place, even if it's a prayer request. Because people need the security of knowing that if I'm vulnerable, if I share my heart with you, will you honor that? Or will you walk away, you know, and go share it all over the place? So it's really important that you talk about confidentiality in there. Okay. You'll want to talk about your discussion and your study guide. And again, this can be part and parcel with the covenant. What are we doing and why are we doing it? And you want to get everybody in on the same page. Then, first meeting, you want to spend some time getting acquainted. You want to get to know these people. And one, and this may take several meetings. We very often just ask people to tell their stories, and maybe we'll take a week or two and just give everybody a half hour or something. You know, tell us your story. Tell us your journey. People can edit as they want to. They can share what they want to, but we get to know them a bit. So you want to spend time getting acquainted. You'll want to also manage. At this point, you will find out who your challenging people are, and who's going to talk too much, and who's not going to talk at all, and who's going to go off on rabbit trails, and who's going to interrupt, and who's going to pick a fight. A lot of that will come out as you're getting to know each other, and it'll give you some direction. So we go till 4:15. Is that correct? Okay. As you're looking at your study guide, you want to make sure that people are in agreement, that they know how to get it. If you don't already have it physically there, you need to talk about finances. Sometimes you don't even pick the study guide till the group comes together. We decide we want to be a group. Now what do we want to do? And there's so many good materials out there now, and I can recommend some if you need them. So again, getting acquainted. By about the third meeting, everybody's had a chance to talk. Everybody's had a chance to kind of find their place in this group, and they're a lot more comfortable. Honor your time commitments. It is very important that you start on time and that you end on time. If you wait until everybody arrives before you start, everybody will start arriving later and later and later and later and later. And if you are still leading the discussion when it's time for everybody to go home and they have to get up early in the morning and go to work, they're not going to be happy with you. So it's really important, and this is where the lesson plan comes in too. You can put times on it, and it's okay to let everybody know. We will have refreshments from 7:30 to 7:45. If you get here after 7:45, you can grab a cookie, but you come sit down. You know, we're not going to be sitting there. We're not going to wait for you. We'll be sitting by 7:45. We'll have worship till about 8. We'll take from about 8 to 8:45 to do the study. And we'll take from about 8:45 to 9:15 to do sharing and prayer. And they know that by 9:15, they're putting on their coats and they're leaving. Now, if that starts sliding back, as it is so easy to do, people won't be happy. So it's really important that they know that they can count on you, that you're the leader, and that you're going to keep them on track. And you could then say, you know, I'd love to continue this discussion, but we just have to wind it up. And part of that will come as you use the lesson plan. If you realize, I can't ask the 27 questions that are in the study guide. I can ask 3, and we can discuss those thoroughly. And I'm picking these 3. And it's okay to be a little bit of a dictator. Now, you know, you don't want to be a mean dictator, and there will be times when you'll want to veer from this. But it's okay to say, you know, there are a lot of really interesting points in this week's study, and the 2 that I'd really like to focus on tonight are this and this. So you're putting everybody on notice. This is what we're talking about. And if people want to argue with you, they can do that. But at least you're being the leader. You're setting the direction. Oh, and that's it. Okay. So, are there any questions that I can answer? We've got a few minutes. Well, I don't know if you can or not. Okay, yeah, this is my notes. Okay, yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So, any questions? What didn't I cover? Yes, ma'am. No, that's a very good question. Thank you. What usually, the question was, should you have things for them to study a week in advance? Once I've decided, okay, this is a group for this population, and we're going to study this study guide, I expect people to do homework. And I talk about that, I think, in the next workshop, From Here to Maturity, I think, is where I cover that. Yeah, if you're just sitting there teaching it and everything, they don't get much out of it. You want some sweat equity in there. So you want them to do their work a week in advance. But your first couple of meetings, you may not do that. See, this workshop is really like your first couple of meetings. How do you create an environment for a good study? Yes. Yes. Yeah, you want something, and if you're a new leader, I would definitely get a study guide of some sort, unless you're a Bible scholar and can create your own stuff. But as a new leader, you've got enough on your mind, go pick a study that will work for the people that you're ministering to. And then decide. Very often, we'll take a lesson, because we got a lot of talkers in our group, we'll take a lesson and take it over 3 weeks, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. We don't rush. Our group is a closed group with an indefinite time period. So we have 11 now, which I think is too many, but I'm the minority and I'm not the leader of this particular group, so that's the way it is. But we will take as long as we need, because our interest is getting it and going deep and getting out on time. And so if it takes us 3 weeks to get through a lesson, that's what we take. And if we can get through faster, we do. So, but pick a study guide that works with your group in the amount of time that you've got, and then decide how you'll break it up. That's right.
You don't really get to see the book. And so how do you...
That's a good question. The question is how... There aren't very many bookstores, and the ones there are don't have a huge selection. What do you do? On Amazon, very often you can look inside the book, and so that's one option. You can talk to people. You can come to things like this and look at books and find out. You may have to invest a little money, or your church may have to invest a little money and buy some. We live in an area where our bookstore is very, very small. And there was one time when one of the other, there's several of us who are teaching leaders and others who are not. And so a couple of us went down to San Jose to the Big Berean bookstore. And they had a huge selection. We just sat there for a couple of hours and looked through things and said, okay, here's what we want. We had kind of decided in advance. I think that time we were doing Hebrews, and we had decided we want a book on Hebrews. So John and I went down and we looked, and we found something that everybody was happy with. Other times, I very often find things that are good and I can just bring it and recommend it. And other people in your group will. What was your comment?
Oh, so we just said the subject, like the Bible, pick some words or whatever, so they pre-study. Mm-hmm. And they would discuss and share.
Okay, so you would just basically write your own. Right. Right.
Pick something that interests them, then it's discussed.
Right.
And then if they want to follow, continue, and they go another session.
Okay. In order to do that, what she's saying is you just pick a topic or a Bible verse or some words or something and have people study it. You have to have people who are willing to do independent study, and you as a leader have to know how to do that. So that's certainly an option. Down on the table, I have two Bible studies that are available for small groups. So there are a lot of ways, but it's a matter of just kind of keeping your eyes open. And if you're traveling, go into bigger bookstores and see what you can find. It's getting harder. It's getting much harder. The other thing you might try, and I don't know if this will work or not, but Google Books, if you go to the back page of Google, Google Books has full text books of many things. Most of them are out of print, but they're getting more and more in print things. So they might have something, but I don't know. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
Question, more along the lines of training new small group leaders. Do you find that it's better to let leaders choose their own studies, or does it work well to kind of have a study already chosen and then hand that over to the leaders?
So your question would be, in a church, like you're a pastor and you have several small groups, question is, do you, as pastor, do you choose the study, or do you let people choose their own? My answer to that is yes. It really depends on your church culture. It depends on your leaders. I mean, if our church tried to dictate what our groups would study, it wouldn't work. We got a lot of really independent people. But in some places, it works just fine. And I've been part of churches where the entire church is studying something. Right now, we are doing the church study. Our whole church is spending this whole year in Revelation. They chose a NAB Press study. We looked at it and said, looks good, let's do it. If we had looked at it and went, we would have chosen something else. Maybe we would have chosen Revelation, different study. Maybe we would have chosen something else. I think you have to offer alternatives. And it may be, you know, this is where the church could buy 20 different studies and have them in the library so that this lady can come in and look at them and go, which one do I want? But on the other hand, it's nice if everybody's doing the same thing. And so it really, again, it depends on what your purposes are. If you have a lot of different groups, depending on the size of your church, the same study is not going to work for my discipleship group and his seeker group. So you have to allow some flex. Okay? Other questions? Yes, ma'am.
A group of Bible study group, sometimes the lady more than man, and the man seems like uncomfortable with so many ladies, and they disappear.
Yes, very good point. That's a very good point, and that makes the point that I was saying earlier, is that... She said that if you have a mixed group and there's always more women and they're more talkative and they're more involved, and so the men kind of disappear. That's why I prefer a homogeneous group. I would do a ladies group and I would do a men's group. Well, I would have somebody else do a men's group. Because, yeah, the needs are very different. And what men need to get out of a Bible study or a group is different from what we need. And what you'll notice is, even in, if it's a group like our age or younger, you have husbands and wives in there. Boy, that's going to shut down discussion like nothing else. Number one, there are things that I don't want to talk about when he's in the room. And number two, there are things I don't want to talk about when his friend is in the room. Okay? So a mixed group can be very valuable, but it's going to be very, very different from a women's group. I mean, you know, you women know, we're going to get down and we're going to deal with the stuff. But if there are men around, we probably won't. And the men are probably the same way. I would wager that, you know, if you got women around, you're not going to talk about the same things that you're going to talk about if it's just the guys. So particularly for a new leader, just do a men's group or a women's group and pick people, you know, as close in age and demographics as you can.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
I just popped on my hand thinking about what you just mentioned about confidentiality.
Yes.
But normally I never heard, you have very good about some of that, but I never heard about when you go to any group. I heard about it's like some people share very secret story, and then turn around next day, whole church, half of the church know already. So can I really almost for what you say is confidentiality, but
yes,
none of the pastor or any people will talk that part unless you practice that. So how do you lead out that if every meeting is talking about, okay, everything here is confidentiality. It's not like a hospital, you know, mm-hmm. or the banking or whatever, they know confidentiality. Mm-hmm. But like these kind of things, people share, they think it's a story, or I can share next to you
right.
and come right. at home and share with husband.
Uh-huh.
So the situation, how,
yes.
going
how
to
do you do it?
How do you do before if you say, okay, whatever everyone come over here is keep a secret, mm-hmm. is because of confidentiality. So
okay.
I feel like it's awkward.
But what I do is, you know, very often I think what happens is people go, oh, and by the way, remember everything in the group is confidential, and now we move on to the next thing. We just sort of gloss over it. I like to spend time on it. With the covenant, I'll say, now, you know, it's really important that we understand that if we are going to grow, we have to have the freedom to share openly. What that means is we have to know that we can trust each other. That's called confidentiality. Mm-hmm. But what it really means is trust. It means that I need to know that if I tell you something, whether you think it's serious or not, that belongs to me. Anything I say belongs to me, and I am the only person with the right to share it with someone else. Anything you say belongs to you. And I do not have the freedom to take that to my husband, to my children, to the pastor, to the prayer group, or anything else. You own it. You have a copyright on it. I may not share it. This is the most important part of our growth. Do you see how much time I've spent on this and how many different ways I've said it? Do you get the idea that this is important? What? It is confidential. Mm-hmm. And so what you want to do is you want to say it in 6 different ways. You want to give them the examples of what they cannot do. You cannot take it to the prayer group, and you can't put it in the bulletin, and you can't talk about it at coffee on Sunday morning, and you can't, you know, you give them the examples of what's going to happen. And we all agree, and we sign this. Then you keep your ears open. And if you hear of something that has gotten out, and I cover this in more detail here under Griselda Gossip. You know, there are some people who just can't not share. So then you need to come back on the 4th week and go, I just want to remind everybody, you know, remember we're sharing deeply and honestly. Remember we're not going to share this with outside the group. And, you know, I know sometimes it's really tempting to just share a prayer request, but we don't have the right to do that. Now, if there's somebody who's still leaking, then, and that's in the book, then you have to deal with that person one-on-one and find out, you know, who it is, and the book gives you step-by-step details for how to deal with it. You absolutely must maintain confidentiality, or your group will fall apart. So you say it in as many different ways as you need to, as often as you need to, until people get it. Question over here. Okay, let me make sure I'm Okay. Between my husband and I should share my stuff and he should share his stuff. I have no right to share your stuff with my husband. If it, you know, it would depend on the situation, but you don't, you know, there's very little that, unless it's, there's a, you know, a suicide threat or something serious, but, and you know, the other thing is if we're in a group together and we're really close and you've shared something with me, it would be my responsibility to say, do you mind if I share this with Bob? I know he loves you too, and I would really, you know, could I share this with him so that we can pray about it? And then you own it, you say, yes, please share it with Bob, or no, I don't want anybody to know. If you say, this is still a little close to me, I don't share it with him. Okay, does that make sense?
That's true. Make a commitment.
Yeah, there are very few exceptions. There would be very few exceptions where I would take something that somebody else shared in a group setting and share it outside the group. They're fewer than we think they are. Okay, we need to do the drawing so somebody can walk away with a book. Are these in here? What? Collect them now. And for those of you, if you've enjoyed the class, would you fill this out and put it in downstairs so they'll invite me back next year? Need valid email addresses on here.
Thank you.
And if you... Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Just go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, do I have them all? Do I have everybody's? Am I waiting on you? Okay. Name and email address is all I need.
She doesn't have email. Just put phone number.
Hmm? Well, all I need is the email address.
She doesn't use it.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So check out the table downstairs. There's lots of resources in there. Okay. Bob is going to choose one. Joan Bedow?
Bedow.
Yay. Okay. Thank you, folks. I appreciate your showing up. Next hour is From Here to Maturity. We'll go into a lot more detail. Now that you're an experienced leader, you can come to the advanced class. And then tomorrow I've got Train My Leaders in the Morning and Why Didn't You Warn Me in the Afternoon. So we'll be talking a lot more about dealing with the challenging people in your group. Why didn't you warn me that I would have challenging people? Why didn't you tell me there would be challenging people in my group? I thought they were all going to be perfect. Just like me. Thank you much.